Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners New York.
Oh, we'll just wait for the siren to go. In your own time.
I'm really excited about this guest.
I know you are, darling.
She... Oh. It's like a really attention-seeking siren. Anyway, I'm so excited about this person that's coming on the show today. She has the seminal book... Now, hold on, I'm going to get the bits wrong. It's Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. Her book is amazing, and it's basically a kind of Bible and a science lesson in one about those four components being all you need to understand to be able to cook well. She will probably say this much better than me. Her name is Samin Nosrat. I'm probably saying it terribly, so I'd like...
Where do you think she's from?
I think she's of Iranian descent.
Armenian or... Oh, Iranian.
Yeah. She grew up in California. So I really liked the book and I was really interested by it. And then the Netflix show came out. Honestly, she's the most enthusiastic person I've ever seen try anything. Everything she puts in her mouth, she's kind of, she does more gestural kind of faces, facial expressions than me. And I just think she's so lovely and enthusiastic and is a perfect person to be able to teach somebody about.
Is she a cook or a baker, do you think?
I think she's everything. She's a chef. Mm-hmm.
Proper chef.
She's trained at Chez Panisse. I don't think so, but I'm sure she will be. She's a professor, I think. She teaches, I want to say Berkeley, but we'll ask. And she's now got this hit Netflix show, which is so beautifully done. It's 4 episodes. You should absolutely watch it. I feel like anybody I've recommended it to has fallen in love with her. So we managed, because I thought she was in New York, because I think she's a New York Times columnist, food columnist. So I was like, oh, she lives here. She doesn't, so I don't know how we've managed to, it's serendipity.
Serendipity.
She's coming at 4:00, so we didn't want to kind of do anything too heavy, but we wanted to kind of implement her theory. Now, I thought you had to have the heat, the salt and the fat and the acid all in one thing to make everything really good. I've later learnt you don't. She's just talking about different ways of cooking.
I've done walnut, fig and gorgonzola tarts.
Mm, little tartlets.
Little tiny tartlets. And Alex has made pistachio scones. Mm-hmm. And you've done macerated...
Macerated strawberries and lime juice with a little bit of lime zest and some brown sugar.
And we've got some mascarpone with vanilla.
Yeah, we've whipped some mascarpone. So it's basically a kind of take on an afternoon tea. And we'll have it with a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And we'll sit down for a chat.
Yeah.
Samin Nosrat coming up on Table Manners New York. Nosrat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Look at you.
Is it that with a... No, it's not even.
Right. I mean, you could.
Okay. Samin Nosrat. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
I don't know how we banked this because I honestly am so excited about this because
Yeah, your
since
your
you
book
read
is,
the book.
Well,
yeah.
the book is sensational, and I've been enjoying the Netflix program so much. And I feel like everyone needs to. I feel like everyone is. You know, people, when we've said our like lineup of this week, people have been the most excited hearing your name.
Oh, that's awesome!
Like people are obsessed with you.
It's very overwhelming. It's very weird.
Is it?
It's super weird. I mean, you must have gone through this too, where you're some nobody, and then suddenly you're quote unquote nobody, and then you're suddenly
somebody. I guess
somebody.
Mine isn't on the same scale as you, where you get a Netflix program.
Yeah, I think
People maybe didn't know what you looked like when it was your book that did so well. It was a bestseller.
Yeah.
But now the TV show must now.
And I think the power of Netflix is crazy because it's like global and it's, you know, mm-hmm. it goes live immediately in almost 200 countries simultaneously.
Yeah.
And so it started the next day. Like the thing started, the people recognizing me started the next day.
And I guess I'd like to think that people that are recognizing you are kind of nice,
oh, they're
friendly
really
people
nice.
Because they're watching a cookery show.
And they like food.
Yeah, they love food.
Exactly.
Everybody is like, I feel like I know you, and they want to give me a hug.
What's the matter?
Yes, me too.
Okay,
more and more.
Sorry,
I was. Okay. Oh, I'm so glad you wanted more.
Yeah, because Jessie does
it. I do it like builder's tea. We've got
in England, builders always have tea that is so dark
because they need to their caffeine.
I don't know what it is. Yeah. It must be.
Is
but
that
that's perfect?
Would you like some sugar?
No thanks.
Okay, fine. There we go.
Wow, this is amazing.
Right, so kind of it happened straight after that. When did it premiere?
October 11th.
So it hasn't been long.
No, a month. Yeah, a month yesterday.
And life has gone crazy.
I mean, my life is the same. It's just people gone crazy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Are you from New York?
No, I live in... So I was... My parents are from Iran, and they moved to California in the mid-70s, and then I was born there...
Is that before the show?
Right before the revolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was born in 1979 in California. So And I still live there. I grew up in the south of California, San Diego, right by the Mexican border. Mm-hmm. And then in 97... I moved up to Berkeley near San Francisco to attend university. And
what were you reading there?
English. And then I actually did my year abroad in London at King's College.
Oh, wow.
And so,
wow.
Yeah. And so I have like a little soft spot for London. Yeah.
And it's now one of the best restaurants.
Yeah. Well, it's
door.
Spring.
Yes,
you know about spring?
I know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What's so crazy is when I lived there, it was 99. And, you know, also I was on a student budget and I wasn't a cook yet. I wasn't a food person yet. So I remember Wagamama was kind of new. That was really exciting. I loved it. And I ate a lot of like shrimp sandwiches from Pret a Manger.
Oh, like prawn cocktail ones.
Yeah.
Prawn mayo, yeah.
But other than that, like the food was not that great. And now London is one of my favorite places to eat. Somebody was just texting me. He's in London yesterday. And he's like, oh, we're at Roti King. And I was like, go to Dishoom, go to Braun, go to Rochelle Canteen. I was like, these restaurants. I mean, when I go to London, I just eat. It's so good. It tastes so
good.
Well.
That's so nice to hear because I feel like California's got some really brilliant spots.
We do. I mean, and certainly in the Bay Area where I, you know, have lived now for 20 years and where I learned how to cook. I think in terms of agriculture, it's one of the best, probably the best and most fruitful places in the world, literally. And and but I love going to see what other people are cooking. And what's cool is for us, our default in California is sort of California Mediterranean, you know, like this kind of like pastas and pizzas and like Italian stews and stuff. But I feel like you guys, because of just what I noticed in London was there's so much more sort of facility for cooks to go into the Indian kitchen, to go into the Southeast Asian kitchen, and also to go, I feel like there's a connection between Britain and Spain in a way that we don't necessarily have. Our default is usually French and Italian in California.
And also, but you've got Mexico.
Yeah, we have Mexico. And so like when I go out, you go out to eat like Moro. With a my God, so good.
The best.
Moro is so good. And Morito, so delicious.
Otolenghi.
And Otolenghi. And so there's a way, I think we have parallels, but we just sort of like veer in slightly different directions. So it's really exciting for me because I've been eating the same food for 20 years, you know, and I've been working with the same cooks, and it's just nice for us to be inspired by other people's food.
But you see, I think Middle Eastern food's had a renaissance.
I agree.
Because of Otto.
And I think Ottolenghi is a big, I got to just do two events with him last week.
Did you do for his
in
book?
California, yeah. And okay. I got to do two.
He's the nicest.
So lovely.
He just makes you feel like you're the most special person on earth.
He really does.
And yeah, he makes you feel so good.
Yeah, and we had these two conversations, and at the end of the second one, we were on stage, and I just was like, I just want to make a point of saying, you know, I grew up with all these ingredients in our home, like orange flower water and pomegranate molasses.
Sumac
that were so normal to us, and it was a part of our cooking. Mm. And then I learned how to cook in Western European kitchens where there wasn't necessarily like a curiosity or an interest in the flavors of my homeland. But Ottolenghi made those ingredients and those flavors sort of, he introduced them into the global lexicon. And that's something worth a lot. You know, I think he doesn't get enough credit for that.
Let's talk about your family and cooking in your family and how that was dinner time and who was... Your mother was the main cook, or did your dad cook too?
No, pretty much it was my mom. And, you know, my mom didn't have a job. So, like, that, it really was her job, was raising three kids and shopping. I always joke that shopping for the groceries, and we spent 40% of our childhood in the back of the car driving around Southern California looking for the right ingredients that tasted Iran, that reminded my mom of home. And so, you know, just the right kind of feta cheese or flatbreads, or, you know, we would drive all the way to the Asian market to get all the fresh herbs because Iranian food has so many herbs in it.
Yeah.
And she is an incredible cook. And she spent so much of her time like getting ready to cook and cooking for us. And we grew up eating, you know, every night there was a different Persian rice at the table, like this beautiful, like, mound of steaming rice, the Persian crispy rice, the tahdi, the yogurt, a salad, you know, stewed meat. And so usually a typical Iranian meal is either plain rice with tahdi and then a side of a khoresh, which is like a stew, mostly with herbs and vegetables and like some few pieces of meat. Or sometimes the rices have other things built into them, like there's herbed rice, or my favorite as a kid was the lentil rice with raisins, which I loved a lot. And my
mom
would make chicken.
The Barbary ones are good.
Sour. Today I was just thinking, this is not your holiday, but I was just thinking the Barbary rice would make really good Thanksgiving side, because it's like these sweet and sour little berries.
Yes. Barberries are like wild cherries.
They're tiny.
Yeah, they're a bit like cherries.
Yeah,
they're
so tart. You have to buy them at the like Middle Eastern store.
You can get them in Peckham at the
Persepolis. Yeah, Persepolis.
Persepolis. Now, I feel like, because I feel like I know you a little bit, but I feel like if you want to have a little bit of banana bread with your cup of tea.
And this one has like a huge chunk of chocolate in it.
No, there's one, there's over there, there's...
like figs and blue cheese?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
With walnuts.
Oh, yeah, great.
So you just... Have what you want, because
I will.
It gives me such pleasure seeing you happy
Shall I get the mascarpone out?
Yes.
It's like you read my mind, because I was like, when do I get to eat?
I felt like you needed to, and it means that I can now too.
Just help yourself.
So
oh, thank
if
you.
You want anything,
okay,
I'm gonna
thank
have
you.
A little bit of that.
Oh, I want one of that too.
And she's our kind of girl.
Yeah.
This is it.
Would you like one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want a
scone? I'll have a scone. Alex will be very pleased. Do you want to pass some strawberries as well?
Oh, yeah, sure. Mum said that I shouldn't do it like this, but you weren't up for the macerated strawberries. But I was trying to like apply the acid.
You did. You really did apply the acid.
I was
so
really
good.
Trying for you.
You did such a good job.
Well, I mean, whatever. It is what it is. I'm just like, but I think I misinterpreted it. So why? I was like, well, when it was like heat, fat, well, I'm doing it in the wrong order, but I was like, you must have that in every dish. And then I was like, fuck, where's the fucking heat? Like, I don't have the heat in this. So, I could put chili, I guess. But then, I think I've been like, I was like, Mum, we should do something with like, sweet. Anyway, I think I've been taking it all a bit too literally.
You're very serious. You're a good student.
Well,
it's good.
I'm trying. But I do think your book is really brilliant for people that maybe aren't competent cooks. Like, the fact that you generously offer like examples of how to dice a carrot and things like that, and I just think that like for lots of people take it for granted, but lots of people may not. Yeah. Do you know how to do that stuff?
Yeah, I mean,
the cups of rice, I liked that. Oh, I like that one. That is so helpful.
What's funny is the other day I was with my friend and we were making rice and she followed the instructions on the bag rather than what I had in my head.
Yeah.
And the rice didn't work. And I was, and then the next day I was with, I went to the Bon Appetit magazine test kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And they were cooking with the same rice that we had ruined the night before.
Yeah.
And I said, is it just me or does that rice never cook up right? And he said, no, it works fine for me. And I said, do you follow the instructions on the bag? And he said, oh, never. Like, you have to follow the ones in your head. And it even gave me confidence to just do what I know mm-hmm, in my gut is the right thing, you know? And so sometimes you're like, but it said so on the bag. It must be right.
Sometimes recipes just don't work.
Totally. And it's nice to sort of give people the, like, I don't know, freedom to know that sometimes it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
And also to realize that you have to use your common sense.
And I think macerated, I don't even know if
they're good. Yeah, they're very nice, yeah.
Thank you. They are good.
It works, darling.
Mum and I.
We argue about everything.
We argue every food. What people get is a compromise. Which maybe is a good thing or not, I'm not sure.
So no one's happy is what you're saying?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm happy.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Can I ask, was your mum a generous kind of educator? A good generous teacher?
She definitely was. But I didn't actually have that much interest in cooking as a kid.
Oh, really?
And so...
what were you interested in?
Reading. I mostly read. I liked riding my bike. Just around the neighborhood. I liked make-believe, and I liked ice cream.
Oh, sweet.
But,
you're still in love with ice cream.
Oh, my God, I still am so in love with ice cream. Yeah, it's my favorite. We were talking about it today, and I was like, I've been on the whole journey. I've gone to the most...
We don't have that.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry,
no, it's all good. I like that this podcast is called Table Manners. And,
and I'm licking my finger.
No, me too, and that it's with your mom, and I was like... Are they going to quiz me on my manners? Because I'm pretty bad in some way.
Well, we always are.
Do you have good table manners?
I can, if need be.
what I like about watching you, I think your table manners are wonderful because what appreciation you have for the person that's cooked something. So when you're trying the ingredients, it's like you're so engaged and enthusiastic, and I feel like that's a fabulous table manner. I didn't actually watch. I felt like you were eating perfectly brilliantly. Yeah,
I know how to use the stuff, yeah. Right? I think I could do it under like a duress.
Yeah.
I never had to go. In the States, I think it's called, there's like cotillion. There's all these things where they teach little young rich white girls how to do the knife.
Yeah.
Etiquette classes. And I didn't go to that. But my mom was, we have our own etiquette, like really intense etiquette in Persian culture. So I'm definitely trained. But I think living in Berkeley for 20 years, I've been unraveled a little bit.
Why, are they quite
we're quite
relaxed.
I mean, it's like the house. So it's like where hippies came from, you know? And so, and even Alice Waters, the wonderful woman who started the restaurant where I learned to cook, Chez Panisse, I remember, you know, it's a beautiful restaurant with all of the silverware and all of the, like, tablecloths and napkins, and you sit down and someone comes and takes care of you and you feel very formal. And then I remember the first time I saw Alice, she always eats salad with her fingers because she just loves to pick up a whole leaf of lettuce and, like, see it and appreciate it. And I was like, oh... Like, if Alice Waters eats salad with her fingers, then I can eat salad with my fingers. And I feel, I feel like I like touching things with my hands. I mean, I don't put everything in my mouth like a monster, but I do love, like, feeling food and using all my senses when I eat. So
do you feel like, that was where you got your most... Did you get more of your training from your mother or from Chez Panisse in the kind of way to cook?
Oh, absolutely, at the restaurant, sure. Yeah, my mom... taught us a lot of basic things, and I definitely learned how to eat and how to taste from my mom, but I didn't really have much interest in cooking before I ended up in the restaurant as a busser, and then it just sort of happened, you know, that I was in this amazing environment.
So you just decided to go and work in a restaurant because you had nothing to do.
You were at Berkeley. Yeah.
And so I was, so let's set the scene.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
I grew up in the 80s and 90s in San Diego. My mom is a great cook. we were an immigrant family. So I
were
mostly
you first generation.
Yeah.
Immigrants?
Okay. So I mostly ate at home, and then I ate a lot of delicious Mexican food, sometimes Chinese food and pizza, mm-hmm. but we were not going out to fancy restaurants. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even really understand that this such a thing as like fancy or world famous restaurants or chefs existed. Right. So then I moved to Berkeley for university, and at my orientation, they said, oh, by the way, there's this famous restaurant here that you would probably want to get your parents to take you to. But I knew my parents wouldn't take me there. It's just not where my family would go, is to some like fancy restaurant that costs $90 a person. So it sort of went in one ear and out the other. And then the next year I fell in love with this like amazing young poet in my poetry class with rosy cheeks. And he was from San Francisco. And we really spent a lot of our time eating. And he showed me all of his favorite places to eat growing up. And he had always wanted to eat at Chez Panisse, which by now I sort of understood had some reputation. Yeah. So we saved $220 over the course of 7 months in a shoebox, and we went to eat there.
Oh, and so romantic.
Yeah, and it's a fixed menu. It's two restaurants in one, and downstairs is the more formal dining room with a fixed menu. We were like, well, if we're only going to go once, let's go for the gold, you know? So we went down there, and it was an amazing experience, and the food was good. But for me, I just had never been anywhere that was like where every need was anticipated and you were just so cared for. I felt like I was in someone's house, you know, in the best way.
Okay.
And there's amazing like flower arrangements, and you walk in and there's just like a pedestal with like the most ripest peaches like falling off. And it's just a beautiful sensory temple. Mm-hmm. And I felt that. I understood that. Even if it didn't fit in any like context of my life before that. And so I just had this feeling like I wanted to be part of this. And the dessert was chocolate souffle, and I had never had chocolate souffle before. And so when the server brought it, she said, do you know how to eat chocolate, or have you had souffle before? Do you know how to eat it, or would you like me to show you what to do? And I said, show me what to do.
I don't know what you're supposed to do. I just eat it.
Have a runny middle?
She said, you poke a hole with the spoon and you pour this sauce in.
Yeah.
And it was a raspberry, like coolie, you know? And so and that way every bite has sauce. So I did that. And she said, how is it? And I was like, oh, it's really good. But you know what would make it even better? Speaking of manners, I was like, you know what would make it even better? Like, it didn't even occur to me that that was so rude what would make it better.
What would make it better?
And I said, cold milk, because it's like this warm, you know, here we eat our warm chocolate chip cookies or our brownies with a glass of cold milk. Like, that's an American warm chocolate, cold milk.
And what did she
say? And so she just started laughing. And she's like, you want milk? And I was 19, you know? And so she brought me milk. And then she brought us each a glass of dessert wine to teach us the refined accompaniment. And it was just this very nice gesture. Mm-hmm. And so I felt so moved. And I wrote a letter asking to work there. So I came back a little while later. And I said, oh, like, I want to be a busser. And they said, oh, you have to bring it to the floor manager. Like, here, let's take you to her office. So they took me to her office. And when she opened the door, it was the souffle lady. And so she remembered me and I remembered her. And also, I think she was probably desperate because she was like, can you start tomorrow? And so I started the next day. And immediately, like, you're just walking through this restaurant it really is a place that honors beautiful produce and excellent cooking. It treats its cooks like, you know, they're the top of the pyramid there. They're the most honored people. And so I picked up on that. And also, I wanted to be a poet. I was a writer. Like, I thought I'd graduate college and be a poet. And so it was occurring to me I maybe needed a skill to make some money. So I just was like, oh, I want to be a cook. And so I begged them to teach me how to cook. And it took a lot of begging and resilience, because at that time it really was like consistently winning best restaurant in America,
Time to kind of
everyone in the world wanted to work there. So I had to prove myself over time. I mean, I proved myself by not going away.
How long were you there for?
Well, between like busing and my apprenticeship and working there, it was about 3.5 years. And then
Do you get paid well?
During the apprenticeship, I wasn't paid, which is pretty standard. But to me, like, I got an education that was far better than I could have ever gotten at a culinary school.
Already.
I finished my degree by then. So I had two jobs where I sort of worked on campus. I worked for one of my former professors. I worked for the old, like, university newspaper. And then And then I did this like all the rest of the time, kind of hustling. I'm a hustler. Like I was figuring it out. I was just doing everything I could do. And also I was 20. Like you have all the energy in the world. Mm. And I lived in an apartment that cost, you know, my room cost $300 a month. So like I didn't have a lot of expenses. I just put my head down and worked. And it was amazing.
Were your parents happy with that?
I don't think so, no.
Because it's like Otto Lengi. Yeah. They wanted you to be an academic.
Well, he like dropped out of a graduate program. Same thing where I'd go home and I'd be like, I'm working at a world-class restaurant. I'm learning these amazing skills. And they'd be like, how much are you getting paid? Or like, shouldn't you go to like, and that there were so many comments from different people in my family being like, how about this master's program? How about that PhD? How about, you know, because
they were
also
ambitious for you.
Yeah. And also being an immigrant family.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Being an immigrant family, like I think for us, you know, education
and
like
important.
Formal education is the way forward, you know, and it's really hard to think outside of that. I think my parents in a lot of ways still don't really understand what I do or, or like exactly the breadth of it or you know what it is, which now like it's fine now I'm so deep into it, I'm doing my thing, it's okay.
But also but you never lose your education.
No, it's no,
so
it's amazing.
You can always fall back on
and
that.
I still go back.
Are
so
you a professor now?
No, I'm just a teacher. No, but
okay,
I go
but
back
teach it
not at
teach?
The university. I give talks and stuff, but I mostly just teach cooking classes. But I the amazing thing about having this world-class university in like my town is that I just am like known for writing to different professors every once in a while and being like, can I come sit in on your class? So every couple of years I'll just go take an amazing class and you keep learning and you keep figuring out how to, and to me, I'm just like I've never ending curiosity. So if it's in class, I can learn. And also now I have this amazing job where I'm a journalist. Like I get paid to go ask people questions. I get paid.
And you can use your English.
Yeah. So
what happened to the poet?
Yeah, the rosy cheeks poet.
Oh, he was so sweet. We were young. It was not meant to be.
He broke
his heart. Yeah. No, he broke mine. But it's but it's all good. Like he lives in Europe now. He's married. It's all good. Yeah. And
has he been in touch about the
no
topics?
Surprisingly, like I'm on this like and I'm oh I mean I never use his name. I don't talk. Yeah, yeah like yeah. It's I know I can imagine he's like listening. But it's fine if he doesn't.
Do you have like time for a relationship when like you're taking over the world at the moment?
I mean, I have a great desire for one and I can make time for one. I feel like I'm a little bit I'm a little bit behind in the dating department. Like I don't know exactly how to do it. I don't really know. I feel very inept in some ways. It's very funny. I feel like I have like very intense and plentiful professional resilience. Like I'm really willing to sort of ask for anything, try and fail, try get up and try again, go do something I've never done before. But personally, I feel so insecure. Like, no, I just don't. So
your
I'm
parents,
practicing.
Your parents haven't sorted that out.
No,
introduced
no.
You.
They don't. They're no, they no, don't dare. No, and I wouldn't want that to happen. No.
I thought it was kind
maybe
of
maybe someone else's parents. Maybe you.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll be on the lookout
okay,
for a
great.
Nice cook
okay.
for you.
Yeah. No, it can be not a cook. Probably
yeah,
not a cook.
Yeah, I wonder
cook.
About that.
Yeah, somebody who does something else.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Do you cook a lot at home?
Well, I've been traveling so much for the past couple of years. I've kind of fallen out of habit. The nice thing for me is at least when I come to New York and when I go to LA, which are the two main places I go to, I stay with friends. And so we cook at home. We eat at home. And I really prefer that to restaurants.
That's exactly what Nigella said.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she said that she just, if she goes away to, say she'd just come back from Greece. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, best thing is to eat with friends.
Yeah,
and
totally.
We all cook together.
It's the best. And so I feel, you know, like the friends I stay with normally have two kids. So we make pasta together and we make bread together.
Are you expected to do the cooking?
No, it's more, it brings me joy. You know, it was funny, the other day was my birthday and I went over to my friend's house and she was like, oh, I'm going to make you this dish from the show. I've really been craving these short ribs. So I went over there and she had not put them in the oven early enough. And so
we had that.
And I was like, and so she's like, it's going to be 10:30 before it's time to eat. And I was like, I'm tired. I have to go to bed. And so we cooked up and I said, can we just eat frozen pizza? She had frozen pizza. So we just ate that. And then she like had a roast chicken and left. And we made like this amazing thing. And she was like, I can't believe I invited you over and you're making your own birthday dinner. And I was like, it doesn't matter. This is actually fun. It's like digging through the fridge, figuring out what's there, making a little chicken salad, you know, making some green beans. Like, I don't care what we eat. You know, it's never about the what. It's about the who and what the story is and setting the scene and just coming together. And I love
what's
that.
What's the best meal you cook?
What's your, what would be your, the one that you're the most proud of?
It's Jessie's birthday.
Okay. And like Rosy Cheeks is coming over.
Rosy
Cheeks is coming over. And you're like, this is how I know how to date. This is my dating. That's your weapon,
it's
right?
True, it is my weapon.
It's your currency,
so, like, what are you going to do to...
Oh, my God. This is stress. Now I'm stressed. I'm, like, sweating.
We can come back to this and you can think.
No, I think what... Definitely. So, to me, what I feel is the most luxurious is to be fed or get to cook, for, like, a many different vegetable side dishes. So, I almost don't even care if, like... I would probably make a yummy like pasta cacio e pepe, you know, with like cheese and black pepper. But then also just like...
Would you be making your own pasta?
For that, I think dry pasta is better. And then... Okay. Yeah. And then
So what's that cheesy?
Cacio pepe. It's like just cheese and pepper.
It's basically just
oil.
Cheese and pepper and garlic. It's just like a super
cheese.
Well, cacio traditionally is pecorino. But I also sneak in some Parmesan because I'm...
So you just grate it over the pasta?
Well, there's kind of a crazy, wacky way that you do it where if you do it just exactly right, So what I'll do is I'll get the pan warm, but not super duper hot. Put a little olive oil in, put a little bit of garlic and let it just start to sizzle gently, like bloom, and with some black peppercorns. And so that's all sort of like getting really aromatic and wonderful. And then the pasta will be done. So I'll bring the pasta over and I'll bring a generous amount of water with the pasta into the oil. And so if you cook it just right, like not too hot, not too cold, that oil and water will start to emulsify. And at that point, I start adding handfuls and handfuls of the grated cheese, like really finely grated cheese.
She's a chef.
And so then it turns into it's like, it's basically macaroni and cheese. It's like Roman macaroni and cheese. But if you have to do it just right with the right amount of water and at the right temperature, and it gets like super creamy and clings to the thing. And you don't have to add any cream or any butter. It's just cheese, oil, and water.
And you're saying peppercorns, but whole peppercorn.
Oh, like or like crushed. You can get a mortar and pestle,
quite
or like
coarse.
Use the quite coarse. I like it pretty coarse.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's gonna
that's
be
in the book. Just so
perfect.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's
it.
Your starter.
Oh yeah, that's probably and then at first I would probably eat like one. Well, first, are we doing the whole thing?
Yes, okay. With drinks.
Okay.
Do you drink?
I do. I mean, not a ton. My parents didn't drink, so it's just it was never my thing.
Yeah.
But I do like a glass of like fizzy wine or like a little, I love cocktails that are very sour and bitter. Mm-hmm. Like I love Negronis and stuff. Mm. And so, but I'm not good at making that stuff. So probably I would just have some fizzy wine, some little snacky, like a little pickle, a little nut. A little like creme fraiche and a smoked salmon on a thing.
Yeah.
What, like and a crostini?
Like maybe with some like a little bean toast and some good olive oil. It doesn't have to be fancy. Just like something salty to eat. Mm-hmm. And then 1 million salads. Like a big chicory, like a radicchio and endive salad I love Caesar salad. So, although maybe on a date you're not supposed to. Whatever. Why? If you're both having garlic and anchovies, you're both having garlic and anchovies.
Yeah,
with like big torn croutons, a big cacio e pepe, and then so many other salads. Like, and what I call salad, I just mean vegetable sides, like roasted vegetables drizzled with salsa verde. And like we made one in the show that has big crumbles of feta cheese on it and herbs. Because I love cooking vegetables, but I live by myself. And so usually for myself, like I'm not going to make a bunch of different things, you know. And I take any excuse to make someone, I'll always be like, I'll make something really simple and then make like 9 different vegetable side dishes. Because going to the farmer's market, or there's a really just good produce market around the corner from my house, just to go there and get a whole bunch of stuff and make roasted and grilled and boiled vegetables and drizzle them all and have all the sauces and the cheeses and the crumb. That's like my greatest joy.
Do you think the quality of vegetables is good here if you're at the farmer's market? Because we go to Greece and as soon as we get there, the tomatoes taste like real tomatoes.
Yeah.
The courgettes, those little baby zucchini we have that are just boiled.
Beautiful.
With with
but that's Greece, come on.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's not that far from England, but everything tastes so much better.
Yeah, well, also because, you know, this is just like the less distance food has to travel from where it was produced, the more delicious it's going to be, especially produce, because almost all produce has innate sugars. And those sugars, the minute a plant is harvested, those sugars start transforming into starches. And so here in New York, a lot of the produce comes from California. A lot of the produce in this whole country comes from California. And so that's why it tastes better in California, as it's traveled less far.
Declare
and so,
independence.
And so, trust me, I've thought about it. But it's just, that's why like the stuff is better in California, is it's fresher. It's not that it's like so much anything. So I do think if you go to the farmer's market here or anywhere, you're getting, because you're getting fresher, more local stuff, it's going to taste better.
Yeah.
So
dessert.
Ice cream, obviously.
What flavor? And would you buy it in or would you make it?
Oh, I would buy it for sure. Homemade ice cream, I mean, I appreciate anyone who puts in the effort, but there's something about, you can't with a homemade ice cream maker get the texture that I'm after.
We do with one ice cream.
Oh,
Alex's lemon.
My brother's, no, but it isn't the texture. It isn't got that elasticity that maybe, but it,
no,
it has the taste.
He cooks it. He does it with his ice cream maker that he bought with vouchers from his bar mitzvah.
Oh.
And so we've got the same ice cream maker.
I love that.
And it's honestly, whenever we give it to anyone,
when
people
you come
say,
over,
okay,
we'll make
the lemon
ice cream.
Okay. It's the best
so
ice cream.
What is the ice cream of your choice then?
Well, it's very inelegant.
No,
it's Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream.
Oh, my God.
I love
coffee ice
cream.
Okay, yes.
I don't think we get it in England.
We don't get coffee anymore, but Häagen-Dazs, I talked about
the texture
about
of Häagen-Dazs is like the ice cream of my childhood. It's so good.
So good.
Yeah, I just
coffee
love it.
Ice cream.
Coffee ice cream.
I love that.
Why don't we have it in England, coffee ice cream?
It was like a limited edition one that we had.
We don't
because
get
they
it.
Think you don't like
who
coffee.
Who wants strawberry cheesecake? Fucking get that
off
the menu.
Yeah, we want
coffee.
And fucking
give us coffee. It's my favorite.
Häagen-Dazs, come in, send the coffee ice cream to England.
Oh,
I love it.
Is that the last?
No, that's what you would cook for somebody, or is that your last supper too?
Yeah, actually, that's not so different. I would add a roast chicken to my last supper. You know what? No, wait. I don't know. This is a really hard question.
I know.
This is a really hard question.
There's nothing Iranian.
I would probably
or,
ask
like,
for Mexican food for my last supper.
Really?
I love Mexican food so
that's
much.
That's from being in San Diego,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I don't
so
know,
what
you guys.
So what would you have? Everything. But
fish tacos.
Okay.
Which
definitely
sort of
guacamole.
Fish?
Any sort of fried white fish? Like
okay.
Just, yeah. Guacamole. Okay. When we went to Mexico to film the show, you know, production is pretty intense, so you're not like eating. We weren't eating the, you know, we ate a lot of burgers basically. But then on the last night, we were able to go out and we went to this place that someone told us to go to, which was sort of the like taco place of a fancy chef. You know, it was his like everyday place. And he had this taco that was unbelievable. It was
Why?
The best thing I've ever had. It was called a pastor negro. So okay. In this part of the Yucatan, there's
pastora.
So al pastor, do you know the al pastor tacos?
Like slow cooked.
Yeah,
pork.
It's slow cooked pork that usually is done on a
okay. steak. I don't know it.
Yeah, and then when you order it, they'll just cut it off, kind of like a gyros, like a Greek gyros.
Okay.
It's actually descended from Lebanese immigrants who came to Mexico with the spit and brought the spit with them.
Yeah.
And so then and turned into al pastor with pork. And they put a pineapple on top, usually, to where that like drips down as it roasts, and the pineapple gets all grilly and yummy. So if you're like at a street side place and you ask for al pastor, I'm always like, get the pineapple too. So the guy will like cut a piece of pineapple to put it in your taco. So this guy, Roberto Solis, at his taco place, Quisín, he makes this thing called pastor negro because there's a sauce called recado negro. There's like a black sauce. It's not exactly a mole. Mm-hmm. But there's a sauce that's traditional to the Yucatan that's black. And it's made by blackening chilies and onions. And you cook everything till it's black and then cook it together and puree it. And it's usually served with turkey and a hard-cooked egg. And you make yourself little tacos, which I thought was really extraordinary and interesting. But I wasn't, like, so excited to eat this, like, negro every day, mm-hmm. even though, I mean, it's just, it wasn't a taste I grew up with. But then what this chef did was he took this negro sauce mm-hmm. and he rubbed it all over the pork that then he turned into al pastor. And this was so unbelievably delicious. So we just went there to this taco place. And I think this is a pretty typical way to eat tacos, at least in the Yucatan, is like you go to the taco place and you just sit down and you order one taco and a beer. And everyone orders one taco and a beer, and then you eat. And then the guy comes back, and you order another taco. And you just eat for 5 hours, like, one taco at a time, you know? And so
like it's like tapas, like how they do tapas. Yeah,
totally. And you just keep going. And so we ate so many of these black pastor tacos. It was so unbelievably delicious. I have to go back.
Really?
I have to go back.
So where is this place?
He is in Mérida, which is the capital of Yucatan. And his place is called Tacos Quisín. His name is Roberto Solis. It was, I'm like, if anyone goes to Mérida, I'm like, you have to go. And it's in a strip mall. You're like, where is she sending me? It's so good.
That.
Yeah.
I want a few more recommendations. Okay, so we're in LA. Where do you eat?
Ooh, I love, there's a restaurant called Botanica that's mostly vegetables. That's so good.
It's wonderful. Yeah, it's really near
good. It's in Silver Lake. Yeah. That's really good. And not far from there, there's, oh my gosh, why am I forgetting the name? There's this amazing Taiwanese restaurant. Ooh. Oh my gosh, of course. Okay. Sonora Town, which is, I just wrote about them for my column.
Sonora Town.
Where is that? It's in LA. It's in downtown LA. Oh. It's they have tacos and burritos, but they're from Sonora, which is a northern region of Mexico, which is more known for their flour tortillas than their corn tortillas. And they make them by hand there. And they're so extraordinarily delicious. And so they have these little tiny, they're almost like a small burrito called a chivichanga that's made with stewed meat and cheese that's like all melted together, and you eat it. It's just so unbelievably delicious. And the story behind it's really amazing because Tio, who's one of the owners and the chef, he grew up sort of on both sides of the border in the U.S., and both his mom and his dad were field workers packing produce in the fields. And so they would have to wake up his mom. And I think his parents split up when he was really young, and he has five sisters. So there were six kids living in this trailer, and the mom would have to wake up every morning at 3 a.m. in order to get to the field mm-hmm. by sunrise. And so she was worried that her kids wouldn't have enough to eat. So every morning she'd make like 12 or 18 of these little chivichangas with beef or beans or whatever she had and leave them on the counter. And that was what the kids would eat all day. And so it's this very emotional food for him, is these little chivichangas, and they're so unbelievably delicious. Oh, they're so good.
You make me more excited about Mexican food.
I feel like you'd maybe, if you're not that excited.
I feel like I've had excellent Mexican food.
Wow, I feel sorry for you.
No, I do too, because I think I was too young when I went there for like 6 weeks, and we kind of didn't understand it. It was like when I was 19.
Yeah.
And then when we went to Tulum, it wasn't.
Tulum's a fucking
that's
pizza.
Different,
it's a joke, though.
Yeah,
like
that's
pizza
different.
Everywhere.
I haven't been there, but Mexico City's really an incredible place to visit.
Apart from when you get mugged.
Did you get mugged?
Well, yeah, but like in a very clever way. He was a taxi driver in one of those Beetles I was told you weren't allowed to go in.
Uh-huh.
Because they have numbers on the top of their cars because for the helicopters to chase them. So they're like the Dodgers. Yeah. So we just got off the bus from Merida. And me and my girlfriends have been traveling. We had our backpacks. And in those cars, you don't have this seat in the front. So I was like, okay, we'll put all our bags there because we're right there. And he turned on the Beatles really loud.
And they're all relaxed and singing along.
And we're like, nah, 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 nah. And my mate turned to me. She went, you don't get this treatment in a black cab, do you? And I said, no, you don't. And then he was just basically pickpocketing us.
The whole time.
From your bags. And it got really loud. And I was like, whoa, this is like really loud. And I swear our hostel was over there. And then he got ratty. And then we got to the hostel and we went to like give in things. And we were like, hold on. Where's my camera gone?
Did he take your passports too?
I didn't take our passports. Good. But I mean, it was really clever.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did it because we were, I mean, apart from me closing my eyes and singing Hey Jude. But it was, yeah. But I really want to eat in Mexico
City.
Oh,
it's incredible. It's such an amazing place.
But you haven't put any Iranian food on Persian
food. Oh, it's true on my list. Well, I don't love eating Iranian food out because, and my mom actually, she's so good. And she also, so in Iran, like the most of the time when you go out to a restaurant, what you eat is kebab, chelo kebab, so rice and kebabs, mm-hmm. because that's not what people really cook at home. And so what we grew up eating when we went out was we would drive to Irvine, to Orange County, and eat where a lot of Iranian restaurants are. Mm. So it was about a two-hour drive from our house. And we would go there on the weekends to eat like huge piles of rice and beautiful char-grilled meats and stuff. So that's more like what my association with restaurants, Persian restaurants,
when
is.
When you make the rice with lentils, mm-hmm. do you put the lentils in dry?
No, you cook them separately first, and then you put them in.
So you put them in with the rice in the rice cooker?
Yes, and some of them fall to the bottom, and some of them stay in the middle.
And then with the oil or butter, whatever you're putting in to make the... Do you call it tadlik?
Tadig, yeah.
Tadig. And then, so that you have to cook the lentils first.
Yes, you have
and
to cook
them. And
do you
ever cook with things like... Would you cook with green lentils or...
Yeah, you could use green lentils. You could use... I wouldn't use the, like, Indian-style dal, you know? But you could use brown or green lentils for sure. Yeah.
We are running out of time. So I just want to say thank you so much for coming over.
Thank you.
And just talking.
And tasting.
I love you guys.
And being, we love you.
So when you come back to London, you come back again.
I will.
And we will have you over because it's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh my God, you guys are amazing.
Well, Samin Nosrat.
So dynamic, so much energy, so positive about everything.
I'm like an absolute star and I loved chatting to her. I loved her passion and her excitement for food. I'm going to do that cacio e pepe though and wait for the emulsion and stuff. It just felt...
Well, I didn't realise if you mixed oil with water, it made an emulsion.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But you've got to get good pecorino. And she didn't mean whole peppercorn, she meant great ground pepper. Yeah.
But I just, I loved talking to her. I can't wait to annoy her now that I've got her phone number.
I think she'd love to be your friend.
I'm going to be an eating friend with her. That's it. She had such the same taste in restaurants in London as me. And I really just, such warmth. Samin, thank you so much for being on. And I really am just so positive that we're going to get so much feedback from this episode of people just kind of being like, who is this woman? I need to know her. So go and watch her program on Netflix. It is, I'm going to say it in the wrong order. I know I am. Salt, acid, fucking, what is it? Salt.
Fat is acid.
No, hold on. Salt, fat, acid, heat. Salt, fat, acid, heat. Go and watch it. Fall in love with her and try out some of her recipes.
Your language was over fucking. You were fucking everything.
Was I?
Yeah.
I wasn't fucking anything, unfortunately.
You were fucking this and fucking that.
Table Manners music you have been enjoying is by Pete Fraser and Peter Duffy. And our dear editor and producer is Alice Williams.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.